This episode is brought to you by KJK. Tired of the billable hour? KJK has a solution. The KJK GC Advantage program offers businesses comprehensive legal services in the areas of employment, corporate services, real estate, trademark, intellectual property, and estate planning, all for a set monthly fee. KJK serves as their clients' partners in business, not just their lawyers. Along with cost certainty and predictability, the KJK GC Advantage program gives clients peace of mind, knowing their projects will be handled quickly and efficiently, maximizing the return on investment on their legal spend. So don't go it alone. Let KJK help. Learn more by visiting kjk.com. Startups Nation, welcome to another episode of the 614 Startups Podcast. My name is Elio Harmon, and our mission here is to help you attract the clients and access the capital you need to build your dream business. Like a good guest, wipe your feet at the door by hitting the subscribe button and come on in. Today, we are going to be talking about Olive. Once a unicorn, the company unfortunately wound down operations in late 2023. Now, to enlighten us on the subject, I am joined by none other than one of my favorite business reporters, Carrie Ghosh of Columbus Business First. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Howdy. Thanks for having me.
Okay, awesome. Now, for full disclosure, before we get started, I reached out to someone high up in Olive's leadership and extended an invitation to share their side of the story. Once I hear back from them, I will work to get them on the show. All right, Carrie, you ready to get jump right in?
Awesome.
All right. So now I love to hear about people's professional experience right before we jump into things. So how long have you been a reporter for Columbus Business First? And when did you first hear about Olive?
I joined Columbus Business First in April of 2007 after about 6.5, 7 years with the Associated Press here, most of that here in Columbus. I got the tech beat in mid-2010, and then the very first, so Drive Capital, be a player in this, Drive Capital stories were written by our then State House reporter, because it was the whole, Mark Kwame was with the Department of Development, then Jobs Ohio, then leaving Jobs Ohio to start a VC fund. So the first actual story about what was then cross-checks was written by our web coordinator in August of 2013. I must have been on vacation. And then I finally covered a talk that CEO and co-founder Sean Lane gave that October. And I finally landed an interview with the co-founders at their office, which was then in the Chase building downtown, in February of 2014.
Wow. So this goes back a long way. And so you have a ton of experience as a reporter. One of the things I admire most about you is like, when I open my LinkedIn, you know, or I open my newsletter that I get from Columbus Business First, I never know what's in there. Right. Carrie, you're always surprising me. It's great to follow your reporting. So you become familiar with Olive and you've been following them for a while. So what's the cross-checks then Olive story, right? How did they get started and who were the key players early on?
Okay, I will preface this that in subsequent reporting and getting little anonymous postcards and stuff, talking that some of this is being called into question by people of the, the oft-repeated origin story of Olive. But basically it was Sean Lane was in the U.S. Air Force intelligence. He said 5 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. He helped set up basically a cellular network for the military that was very hard to keep track of the enemy and keep track of each other and their movements because, you know, they're not here with, you know, a lot of Verizon towers around them. And he parlayed that into a software company in Baltimore, being near military stuff, called BTS, which in speeches he said he sold in 2011. His LinkedIn says he was CEO of that till 2013. But in any case, in the meantime, then Governor Kasich talked Mark Kwame into coming to join the Department of Development. that led to him forming Jobs Ohio, and that led to Drive Capital, right? So this is all going on at the same time. So BTS, the Baltimore company, opened a satellite office in Gallipolis, which was is Sean Lane's hometown. And there at the ribbon cutting, Sean Lane and Mark Kwame meet. And Oft told the story that Kwame said, "What are you working on?" And he said, "Well, I've got this military software company, and I've got this, this little idea about healthcare doesn't have the internet. We should build an internet for healthcare." The story goes that Kwame said, "Drop everything, move to Ohio, move back to Ohio, and we will build a billion-dollar company." That was in 2012, I think. The company was formed actually in Baltimore in 2012, and then moved here. And Drive Capital officially invested $5 million in 2013.
Okay, so you said anonymous postcards and stories being called into question. All right, now you're making this juicy for me, okay, Carrie? That's why I like you as a reporter, okay? I didn't want to go into the juice, just the facts, ma'am, but we got to go into the juice now. What do you mean by anonymous postcards and stories being called into question? Are you saying there is some information that's coming out that this thing didn't really happen the way it was told?
So when I did the big cover story on Inside the Collapse of Olive, I retold this story at the lead and said the decorated Air Force veteran, because on the BTS website, it says, Sean Lane, who had been awarded the Bronze Star, that seems decorated, and someone, sent me a card from a, PO, just dropped it in a mailbox, whatever. There's nothing I can find. And said, "Everyone's always saying he's this decorated military veteran, and no one has ever checked this out." And I've been trying, but it's really hard if you don't have someone's social security number to get their discharge papers from the U.S. military.
Wow. So, okay. Well, we're going to leave that where it is. I'm sure when you get a lead, you're going to track it down, and we will stay tuned to find out.
I don't even know if it's important. It was just like, well, okay, I'll chase this down. You said I never checked it out.
Okay, well, Carrie loves a challenge, all right? So
Mr. and Ms. Anonymous person, I'm trying.
Okay, but the rest of the story, the company, BTS, Baltimore, mm-hmm. Columbus Connection, how he met Matt, none of that is in question. It's just...
Mark Kwame. So one other person who I interviewed said that there's perhaps some embellishment to the Kwame say drop everything thing here. So I haven't been able to talk to him either about this.
Okay. So however it came together.
I'm just trying to be, dot my I's.
Yeah. However it came together, it did. And so the companies. Yeah,
but they definitely, they formed this company, moved it here, and Drive invested that first $5 million.
All right. And so I know I'm jumping ahead because none of this stuff is like overnight, but how or why did the company become so successful? I know it was cross checks at one point and then a rocket ship to unicorn status. So what did you find in your reporting that could explain that level of success?
So when I saw this question in prep, my note to myself was it successful? But it had, I will say when I first started covering them at the cross checks, it was, a new type of company for Columbus. This is back when, a $15 million round was the hugest thing ever. And they were bringing this new Silicon Valley type approach to Central Ohio, where all tech had always been, we do B2B software and make revenue. And one of my first stories, I actually quoted them that, you read that right. They're not charging for their services. So what they first were doing was identity resolution. So you would do a fingerprint scan at a hospital, and it was to stop medical identity theft, which was a way that people could illicitly get drugs, you know, pose as someone else and pick up their prescription. But really in the background, what they're trying to do is find a way to interconnect electronic medical records, because healthcare is really backwards, you know, really paper driven. Your doctor still has a fax machine. And it's partly because of patient privacy laws and partly because it's a big behemoth that's hard to, you know, rebuild all their systems. All the hospitals right now are on Epic, at least in Columbus, but like, you know, they can't, they have trouble getting stuff from my doctor to the, you know, when I had a little cancer thing, you know, the oncologist can't send their records to the surgeon's office and vice versa. And it's like, because they're different companies.
Yeah, and if it's not communicated, you could miss that communication altogether.
They will find, you know, you checked in at Holzer Health System in Gallipolis, but you went to Virginia on vacation and went to an ER. They wanted to bring that all together. Am I being too wordy with that?
No, that's an elegant explanation. And because I work in healthcare as well, I understand the problem. Especially back then, 2012, right? It was really bad. At least now, there's been some consolidation. Like you said, a lot of people are all moving to one system. Maybe more systems are trying to communicate with each other. But I can see why the idea resonated so strongly back in 2012. It was really bad then. It was like paper charts, fax machines everywhere. So I certainly get it. And so they get the investment, and it must have been a market waiting for a solution? Or does the question about whether they're successful come from the fact that they weren't charging and they were acquiring customers for free? Why do you question this success story as it's been told generally?
Well, I was always a little bit, I mean, Sean Lane is always very compelling. And, you know, he'd say that what we're doing is so, you know, he had this huge vision. Always. And he stuck to it. He stuck to the same vision. And he'd say, you know, I have a 2015 story. What we're doing is so big, it requires a lot of capital. And he said, you know, he didn't have any idea, you know, when they'd raise another round or when they'd be making money. So the idea was, let's get ourselves insinuated into every hospital by being free at first. But then they started rolling out some paid services. And they were up and down, like they'd go from 20 employees to 80, and then they'd cut some jobs. And then they'd roll out new things like e-check-in. And then starting in, let me call it my timeline, is it 2017, they started this bot idea, Olive. It was like a kind of a side product. And then got a bridge loan from Drive to kind of remake the company. So everything from 2012 to 2017 that they had built up as cross checks, the identity resolution, the e-check-in services, devices, they sold it all to a Dallas company. And when I went tracking down, how did that company do, to all intents and purposes, the last mention I can find of them is 2020. I think they shut down. So the company that was started does not exist, and then it's just Olive. Does that make
sense? Yes, it does.
It's a new company.
Yes, it does.
So that's why I stopped calling him co-founder Sean Lane and just called him founder Sean Lane, because the two co-founders had left and, you know, said, you know, we have nothing to do with Olive. That all came after me.
So what did your reporting find out about that? Like, did you have a chance to talk to them? Do we know why they left? I know this is a big pivot, and pivots happen all the time in startups. But this is a massive one, right? You're completely shifting from what you were doing before, and you're restarting.
There was one co-founder that I didn't even know existed until this year, and I can't even remember his name. He's so in the background. But the other co-founder was Brad Macho. And he left even before the pivot to Olive. He just said, oh, we're a growing company And I really like being at the early stages when you're first building and not when you have 100 employees. It just, you know, I think there are other things that were there that have never been set.
Yeah.
So, but I couldn't get to the bottom.
Okay. And this is, I mean, this is startups, right? It's incredibly hard to build a business from an idea. Startups fail all the time. This just happens to be a conversation that needs to be had about a very important company to the ecosystem that is no longer. So nobody's taking anything away from the folks who built the company up until that point, and then Sean taking it forward. These things happen as an ecosystem. We do have to reckon with them. So we've been talking about, go ahead.
Yeah, he said, I mean, when they sold this all off, he said, my investors understand that what we had built would probably be a good company. Maybe it'll be a 100 million company someday, but we want to be a multi-billion-dollar company. So he thought that this software play, robotic process automation, would be a much, you know, what's that favorite, everyone's favorite word, scalable. So that's what was, but it was still, he said, it's still the internet of healthcare. It's just doing it with a different kind of software product.
That's right. And so this is a quote from Sean Lane. That was kind of what he said at the time. Okay, we've mentioned Mark, Kwame, and Drive Capital, but who were the key investors in the company? And one of the things that you said was success, they weren't really charging for their services. So what role did funding play, right? Or how critical was funding in their success?
So as Olive, they were making revenue. It was, you know, subscription software revenue from hospitals, and they were adding healthcare systems. Totally over that decade, they raised more than $850 million. And the vast majority of that really came post 2020. So $383.5 million in 2020 alone. And then the big one, the $400 million round in July 2021, in which it was first a unicorn in the last round of 2020, valued at $1 billion. 7 months later, valued at $4 billion in a $400 million round. And who are the investors? It's, you know, it was Drive. And then in 2016, it was the first Silicon Valley investor, it was Khosla Ventures. And in speeches, Sean Lane has credited, I think it's Vinod Khosla, with first saying, you have to think massive. You're going to build a massive company. The really big firms like Tiger Global, they're based in New York City, and General Catalyst, which has a whole bunch of health IT companies, came in 2020. The 2021 was led by Vista, Base10, and again, Tiger Global.
Let me stop a lot
of big names.
Does anybody who's listening right now remember what was happening in 2020 and 2021 globally? One of the biggest things was the world was shut down. Nobody's raising capital. So what is it about Olive, right? This idea of a bot and being able to automate a lot of things and still being the internet of healthcare that appealed so much? Like, what were people really investing in? Did you find that out in your reporting? What were the investors really valuing at that point in the company's life?
Well, to the contrary, 2021 was the record-breaking year for venture nationwide. It just soared to dizzying heights. It was the free money phenomenon. And yes, this huge idea of, you know, Sean Lane saying he just made these huge claims. Administrative waste, he said, is 1/4 of all U.S. healthcare spending. That's $1 trillion. So we'll take $1 trillion out of U.S. healthcare spending, and we'll just get a tiny percentage of that, and we'll be a huge company. So it was, you know, they kept rolling out new ideas and of what kind of products that they could do to. They used all this funding to make acquisitions, prior authorization, getting into physician decision support. They raised another $50 million on the side and started Circulo, which was going to be a Medicaid managed care plan. So it's just, Sean is a very compelling vision of this, you know, and I often say, like, many of the health IT companies would not exist if the U.S. just didn't have a broken healthcare system. They're all out there trying to solve one little broken piece of it. And he thought he could, you know, solve a big, huge chunk of what's broken about healthcare and insurance.
All right. Well, Carrie, there's so much more to talk about, but we do have to take a break. So, folks, thank you so much for tuning into this conversation. We'll be right back after these messages. Hey there, 614 Startups community. We're thrilled to share some exciting news with you. This podcast is proudly supported by Loop, the game changers in return management. Not only are they revolutionizing e-commerce, but they're also on the lookout for talented individuals to join their dynamic team. Looking to be part of a company that values innovation and fosters a vibrant culture? Well, Loop is the place to be. Check out their open positions at loopreturns.com/careers. And here's the scoop. Loop has been recognized by Forbes as one of the next billion-dollar startups of 2023. Want to be part of a success story? Now's your chance. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity. Head over to loopreturns.com/careers and be part of something extraordinary. Loop, where innovation meets success. Apply now.
This episode is brought to you by Rev1. Rev1's mission is to help entrepreneurs build great companies. As you navigate the waters of business entrepreneurship, you don't have to go it alone. A strategic partnership with Rev1 connects innovators to the talent, customers, space, and funding you need when you need it. Get started with Rev1 Startup Studio by visiting rev1ventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is rev1ventures.com.
614 Startups Nation, welcome back. I know you guys are hanging on the edge of your seats like I am. All right, so it's 2020, 2021. I want to dig into what you said about Sean, about how compelling he was, and how maybe even more importantly, the compelling the vision was. Can we tap into that a little bit more?
Yeah, so I had an interview with him right after that big round, and it was, as far as I can find in notes and calendar settings, the last time I actually spoke in person with him instead of email exchanges or radio silence. But that, you know, he had this huge vision that Olive would become not just your robot coworker, automating tasks like looking up insurance eligibility, but it would become its own independent decision maker. It would become an advisor to medicine, improve health outcomes. So I would quote from him from that story. Automation is about more than just workflows, but access to data and wisdom shared collectively. Lane said, there's a lot of things that can be done better if we're sharing data globally. And I mean, that is the story he told in talks. That's the story he told to investors. And that's the story they were telling the hospitals who became their customers.
Yeah, I mean, $1 trillion problem, that's fairly easy to understand, right? You don't need a PhD. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of waste in healthcare. A quarter of that is in administrative. We're going to try to automate it, but we're going to be more than your robot coworker. That sounds ultra appealing if you could find an elegant solution for it. But after that, those funds were raised in 2021, what started to go wrong, right?
Part of the problem is they would say, we have built, Olive can do. When, as far as I can tell from what was happening and from talking to employees after the fact, that was the vision, but it was a lot harder to build. It was a lot harder to get hospitals to want to change. In the cover story I did, I talked to a healthcare analyst who said she watched one of these talks that Lane gave, and said he doesn't know much about healthcare. So he might know software, you know, you're not going to just go in here and change a whole industry like that overnight. So in one case, it was just that they, or one way to look at it is they ran out of time and money. When I talk to employees and I'm trying to do further stories, I just need more people to call me. What they were really doing is really manual stuff. So every time they sign on a hospital, you can't just say plug in Olive and it'll go to work. They had to go in and set up for that hospital system exactly how it would go and scrape websites to go get, you know, this this eligibility or this Medicare code and, you know, fix it with that date. And if anyone in any of the points that it reached changed their web design, it would break. The Olive would break. And so they'd have to go in and redo it. So they became like these little bespoke consultants. And that's a very people-driven company and not a scalable software solution. The AI was very artificial. It was human intelligence basically driving it a lot. And they went from 200 employees at the start of 2020 to almost 1,400 to then, you know, July 2022, 1 year after raising that $400 million, having to fire 450 people. And then another 200 and some in February 2023. At the same time, there were external factors that were cutting off that free money spigot. So interest rates rose, SVB collapsed, VCs got worried. VCs started telling their portfolio companies, it's time to make revenue. And we're not, you know, opening the coffers so much anymore. And on the customer side, the consulting firm Kaufman Hall called 2022 the worst financial year for hospitals and health systems since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. So the customers are cutting back because they don't have the money to spend on, you know, some innovation thing for a future savings. VCs aren't putting money in. Everything they're doing is really people heavy and they're cutting people. When they cut those 450 jobs, Sean Lane put out an all staff email of choose vision over status quo and act with urgency, drove us to make significant investments across the most pressing parts of healthcare, scale our teams and move quickly to bring solutions to the market. Our fast paced growth and lack of focus strained our product and engineering resources and prevented us from executing quickly on key initiatives. I take responsibility for this. So basically, they spent too much trying to do too much and just ran off a cliff.
Okay. So I'm going to recap what you said there because I think I get the gist of it. Number one, they were promising a product they were still building. It wasn't completely built. And so the client would sign on expecting that on the back end, this AI or this bot was the one doing the work. However, on the back end, they were doing that manually. So in another way of looking at it, they had outsourced the manual work from the provider that was their client and brought it in-house into Olive. My question is, okay, they're realizing that this is happening. Layoffs are one way to address issues. What were some other ways to try to address those things? And what I failed to mention there in my recap is investor demand, SVB collapse. So everything is happening all at once. What other strategies, as you were talking to other people who were involved with this, did they try to employ besides just what I know corporations do? When times get tough, we're going to cut staff.
Well, this was also during the period that they kind of stopped talking to me. So I do know when they filed that final WARN notice with the state when they were shutting down this past October, that said we were trying to raise funds until the last and we could not. And in the lawsuit that Jobs Ohio filed, they included email chains. And when they were, I should back up and say Jobs Ohio sued them in August of 2023, in part because of those layoffs in 2022, because they wanted to claw back all the money that they had spent with recruiting and training assistants, saying you got this aid and you didn't meet your end of the bargain, which was to keep this employment level. I think it was to be 170 jobs in Ohio for X number of years. So they met it and then they fell off. So they said, we want it all back. But in those lawsuits, they included email chains where they were trying to negotiate the settlement. And they said, we are trying to negotiate an asset sale. So they were trying to sell off assets back in, I think it was September. They were negotiating leading up to this, what eventually transpired in October, which is the last parts were sold off for pennies on the dollar.
Wow. So that was the straw that kind of broke the camel's back. All of the things that we discussed before, and then at the last being unable to raise funds. Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, investors had poured $850 million in. They also, when money was free and people were just handing out stuff in 2020, 2021, they had borrowed $100 million from Silicon Valley Bank. So the parts that were sold starting in April of last year, there was one part sold for $30 million-ish. And then the final parts on October 31, there's three chunks. Waystar, which is a Louisville company going public, bought one product line for $10 million. So if you go to Olive AI's website, you end up on Waystar now. They bought the website and all of those assets. The remaining prior authorization business went to Humata Health, which was founded by the founder of a company that Olive had acquired. He had left Olive, and then he forms a new company and buys back part of what had been acquired was sold off to an earlier company. And he bought the rest for $1.25 million. And then there were the portfolio of investments that Olive had made in kind of sister or spin-off companies called Olive Ventures. All of that went to Sean Lane for $1 million cash. So all of this totaled less than $50 million. And that was not enough to repay the Silicon Valley loan. So investors, including employees who would buy shares, got nothing.
Oh, wow.
Their shares went to zero.
Oh, wow. And that's a perfect segue into my next question, which is what has been the fallout? Right. So as you talk about the company kind of selling off assets, if you could give me the line at the bank, right? Or the line, you know, when you have a run on the company, run on the bank. What was that line like? Who was at the front, who was at the middle, and who was at the back?
Well, it's basically Silicon Valley Bank, and then, oops.
Right, so the bank clawed back what they could, and then everybody else was like, there's no money to pay.
And if folks remember, it collapsed, but it still exists. It still has loans, and First Citizens out of North Carolina, it basically bought that business and there's also a SBB, Silicon Valley Bank Ventures, which is its own thing, but the banking business itself went to this kind of legacy normal type bank in North Carolina.
Okay. So,
and they wanted that loan repaid. Then there's Jobs Ohio trying to get nearly $600,000 back. They won a default judgment, but that judgment came November 20th and Olive was out of business for 3 weeks by then.
So Jobs Ohio is out 600 grand. SVB is out 50 million. right? Because they got approximately
roundabout. Yeah, there was an office auction too. Mm-hmm. So I assume that also, no one would tell me, but I assume that also would have to go to them, but they would not disclose the amount that was raised. Whole lot of MacBooks and smart screens and.
Yeah, everything you'd find in a really nice billion-dollar technology office.
Yeah, leather chairs.
Okay. Probably a few paintings and tables and some nice stuff. Okay. So we got SVB, we got Jobs Ohio, investors. Investors go to zero.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that includes some employees. I'm trying to talk to more, but, you know, I talked to one so far. Okay. You get it first because I haven't even gotten to write the story yet. He said, you know, yeah, it's probably about $1,500. I believed in the company. I believed in its mission. And I wanted to be part of its success. And this is a pretty, you know, these aren't all like the executive level, like anyone was able to buy shares.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, you know, that's gone for them, plus losing their job. Mm-hmm. The final shut, there were some employees who transferred with these asset purchases, maybe about 80 went to Waystar or were offered jobs at Waystar. But that left 110 people at the very end who were just, you know, gone.
And when a company like that goes away, what does that mean for revenue for a city like Columbus? You know, tax revenue, et cetera. Have you been able to explore any of that, the impact of the jobs lost and things like that?
I don't have a very good count of, because they adopted this remote structure, I don't have a very good count of how many of its jobs were in Ohio, but obviously, yeah, I mean, these are good paying jobs, 800,000, you know, in the tech sector, and 2.5% of that is city income tax.
Yeah.
I do know who the new tenant is in their downtown headquarters. I'm trying to land an interview. So I think it will be exciting. It's a new venture development and investing group. So stay tuned. But I think probably that, you know, the worst impact besides, you know, all these folks who lost their jobs in not necessarily the best job market, but at least, you know, we're always hearing that there's a lot of need for tech workers. Hopefully everybody lands well. But I wonder what it will do for the investing climate. I hope it doesn't, you know, too much dampen the belief in tech, in innovation, in investing, because they were that exciting, you know, huge vision, Silicon Valley type, and yeah, it did go bust. But from the beginning, it was always hard to get Columbus area investors to accept venture means risk. You know, they kind of expect 80% to fail or whatnot. But there are a lot of good and, you know, revenue producing and growing companies. And I worry that it might dampen investor support for the companies that remain.
Yeah, isn't that always the case? A lot of times the fallout has unintended consequences, which is it has a ripple effect through the investment climate, and then companies are unfairly impacted by it, but that's business. Hopefully over time, this could not just only be a cautionary tale, right, about what can happen when you invest money in startups, but really, It also says that big visions, right? Solving big problems. Columbus can be a city for doing that as well. All right. Not to make this too personal, but when you're starting a company, everybody looks to the CEO, especially when the big driver of the business is that CEO's vision. So I want to talk about Sean Lane just with my final question, and then I'm going to leave it to you for your final comment. What have you been able to uncover about his role throughout all of this and then the future ventures that he's working on, including Circulo, which I was very, very curious about and what happened there?
I had been kind of pursuing the Circulo story they pivoted from Medicaid to not Medicaid managed care, but they landed on a different section of Medicaid, which is payment to home and community-based care for individuals with developmental disabilities. So they started hiring a bunch of people, you know, home health aides, and they said, yes, but we're still a tech company. It's tech-enabled services. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't find much on them. And then the long and short of it is, it got acquired. Circulo got acquired by a home health agency in Gallipolis owned by Sean Lane's father. And I guess they're just operating as a home health agency. I don't know what happened to the tech part of it. The people who were the last people who were the president don't respond to me. When I tried sending a message to Sean Lane's father, he immediately removed CEO of Circulo from his LinkedIn profile. And it's just that there's no contact back. So I don't know what happened to that. Sean Lane has a new startup, which he incorporated in July of 2023 while Olive was struggling. It was a Delaware Corp. And then he did, you know, what's called a foreign company registration with the Ohio Secretary of State on October 31st, the day Olive shut down. And then brought it out of stealth and made announcements. Here's my new thing on LinkedIn in the first week of December. And that company is called Ghost Dog. And he's back into the military intelligence world. And it's the modern browser for the classified web. So the idea is if you're in the NSA and you're searching for, you know, are the Russians moving weapons in Belarus? And then someone who's in a different U.S. security agency over in Germany sees that you search for that. They can share their intel with you all securely. It has a lot of echoes for Olive with me right now if you go to their YouTube channel, ghostdogvideos.com, it has all this, we can do, we have built. But in their first actual, you know, newsletter about the company, they say we are readiness level, I think it was readiness level one, but I looked it up in the military's what readiness level means, and it's basically a prototype. So they're again saying we can do and we have this and this is powerful, but they haven't built it yet.
Listen, Carrie, all right, with given your experience and what you've seen at the Associated Press and now with all your experience at Columbus Business First, I'm going to say a little something after you go, but is there anything that we haven't covered here that you feel like is important to be discussed before we end our conversation?
I think there's more to tell about the Olive story and about what the impact on those employees who bought shares, on what it promised versus what it could deliver. And I think, I'm not like trying to like jump on a grave or something. I'm trying to tell the story of here's what can be learned. You can have huge ideas and say we're going to fix healthcare, but you can go about it, maybe in a more deliberate fashion instead of trying to do everything at once. So Sean Lane, call me. And if there are any former employees who want to talk more about this, or investors or customers, I've been reaching out to hospitals, say, what was it like on your end? I usually don't hear back. Just call me, folks.
Yeah.
My email's on our website.
Yeah. And call Carrie and Sean. You know, hey, listen, if you listen to this and you want to come on, this is an open platform. whether you want to talk about Olive or you want to talk about Ghost Dog, listen, 614 Startups is a platform for the people. We're trying to get information out, so you're always welcome here. So, Carrie, thank you so much for your time and your excellent reporting, always, for covering this very dynamic and evolving and a growing startup ecosystem here in Columbus, Ohio. My one takeaway is, you know, there are a lot of old adages out there, and they become cliches, so people take them for granted, right? But, hey, under-promise and over-deliver. There's a reason that that exists. And that adage, which is now a cliche, didn't go away just because you're building a tech company. Do not get that reversed. If for anything you take away from this podcast, do not forget that is a real thing. Tech does not exist in a reality all its own. It might seem that way when you feel like that's what you need to do to raise money, but it always comes back to bite. All right, folks, that's another episode of the 614 Startups Podcast. Join us again next week for more startup content. Until then, peace.
That's a wrap, folks. You can find this and all our episodes on our website, 614startups.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and all your favorite podcasting platforms. Don't forget to subscribe and write a review. If you'd like updates sent directly to your inbox, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter on the website. To engage in the 614 Startups community, follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at 614 Startups on all platforms and join the conversation. For sponsorship opportunities and collaborations, email us at info@614startups.com.